And tonight on Coast to Coast, we will be talking about Keys to Perception, a practical guide to psychic development. Ivo Dominguez is next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with our special guest, Ivo Dominguez, a visionary practitioner of a variety of esoteric disciplines. He has been active in Wicca and the pagan community since 1978. He was a founding member and a past high priest of Keepers of the Holy Chalice of the First Coven of the Assembly of the Sacred Wheel, a Wiccan tradition there. He currently serves as one of the elders of the Assembly of the Sacred Wheel. And he, of course, is an expert and a professional astrologer as well. Ivo, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. How are you doing?
Good. I'm looking forward to this. A great book, by the way, Keys to Perception. My late aunt, Dr. Shafika Karegula, wrote a book called Breakthrough to Creativity, and that was on higher sensory perception. So it's in my blood, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And tell me a little bit more about yourself. How'd you get involved in all this Wicca and in that?
Well, you know, I was always a seeker. And as a child, I had a lot of experiences that fell outside of the normal. I was always seeing the old residents of homes. I had a grandmother who took me very seriously and was supportive, and another who was a little bit more harder line Catholic. But it was part of my upbringing. It was a belief that the world was larger than what was physical. And I often had prophetic dreams. I would have experiences that led me to believe that the world was bigger. As a result, I started exploring different religions very early, went to different churches, explored synagogues, mosques, went through a period of atheism, as all young people do, apparently, and found myself reading quite a few books about ceremonial magic, the Western mysteries, and about nature religions, of which Wicca was one.
Lots of confusion about Wicca. A lot of people think it's witchcraft. It is not witchcraft. You're believers in a god. It's like it's a male-female type god belief system, isn't it?
It wasn't that far a jump since I had started Catholic to see the feminine as divine as well. And in Wicca, we believe that pretty much if it exists, it is holy, it is sacred. All of physical creation, all animals, all plants, all of nature, and that the divine shows itself to us with both a male face and a female face, that there are many gods and goddesses, if you will, at the same time that the universe is one thing. And I would say that Wicca is also fairly diverse. Wicca is like saying Protestant. It doesn't particularly narrow it down. There's a lot of different, I'll use the word that's familiar, denominations, but traditions is the word we prefer. And they each have their own take on things. But the basic premise is that we are all children of the divine on our way of evolving up to meet them.
Is Wicca a growing community?
I'm going to say no.
Really?
I would say, yeah. Here's what I'll say. And I think this is generationally true right now. I think that Wicca is growing, but relatively slowly. What I do think is growing, and I see mostly in 20-somethings, 30-somethings, is an exploration of different things. I'd say it's better to say that there are more people that are, in the general sense, pagan, in the general sense, spiritual and believers in the sanctity of life in the universe, but fewer people necessarily are going the route of organized religion of any sort, whether it's mainstream or on the side. So where I would say paganism is growing, I would say that specific flavors of it, like Wicca, are holding their own and growing slowly. Does that sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I should say, Ivo, yeah, you're a pretty accomplished author. I mean, you've got a lot of books out there beyond just Keys to Perception, Spirits Speak, and Beneath the Skins. And you've got, tell me about the CDs you have out.
So one of the things that our organization has done is we've founded a library, the New Alexandrian Library. It's already built. It's about 4,000 square feet. We are collecting books and ephemera, newsletters, etc., from all spiritual traditions. And by that, I mean not just Wicca or paganism, but Buddhism, Christianity, Islam. anything that is the mystical end of any tradition and preserving it. And some of that is, and some of that's simply because even in the mainstream traditions where they're well represented, their mystical side tends to be underrepresented. So the CDs were created originally as a fundraiser for that library, and they are CDs of chants and songs that we use in our ceremonies and also offer them to anyone else who wants to use them for their own purposes. So they are near and dear to my heart because I think that sound and music are one of the ways in which we awaken our connection to energy, to our own creativity, and to the universe as a whole.
I think so, too. Where's the library located, Ivo?
It's located in Delaware.
Okay.
A lot of people go, where's that? It's a small state. Yeah, it is. but it's centrally located on the mid-Atlantic states. It's about a 2.5-hour drive to D.C. or Philadelphia or Baltimore, about a 3.5-hour trip to New York, about a 5-hour trip to Richmond. So it has a good chunk of population within its easy one-day drive.
I got a friend who picked up a little cottage up that way, and he just goes there to escape. He loves
it. Sure.
Yeah.
A lot of people said, well, why are you doing books in this day and age? And they also said, why in the middle of nowhere? And honestly, part of it is our goal is preservation. It's cheaper to buy land and space in a smaller area. But more importantly, you know, books are a solid, stable format, whereas digital materials fade in some ways more quickly.
You know, and I still like, Ivo, to be physically holding the book I'm reading.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different feel. Maybe I'm old school. What do you think?
Well, I would say that having that, one of the things that the library is doing is going through old diskettes and floppies from people that have sent us we have materials on here that need to be preserved. Can you get it off of this format and convert it into something current?
The book, the title, of course, is Keys to Perception. Yeah. The subtitle is interesting, A Practical Guide to Psychic Development.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about, is it a training guide? What is it?
It started as a request from my students. I give a variety of different workshops on many topics, but one of the things that is true is that to the degree in which you are capable of opening yourself up to your intuition, to perceiving what's beyond the physical, then you're likely to be more successful in your meditations, in your healing rituals, in your work in general, magically or spiritually. So indeed, it is in part exercises to generate flexibility in the mind, become more aware of how it is that you perceive. And part of that involves specific exercises and techniques. And part of it's about shifting attitude about what it is to perceive, because you can't really get there until you grasp the following. We are already living in a illusion of reality. When we see things, we exclude most of what we perceive. When we hear something, we only pay attention to the sounds that make sense to us. Just as when we were babies, we had to learn how to focus on objects and motion and learn how to see, we, over the course of our life, develop a style of how to perceive things. And that's useful in a kind of evolutionary survival way, but it also limits what we actually allow ourselves to attend to. So part of it's about learning the necessary tricks to become mentally flexible to open up the senses. Then there are specific exercises on how to do particular kinds of divination, such as scrying into flame or crystal or water, or also learning to manage the skills. Because if you open the door, if you open the skills that I think are inherent in most human beings, you also then have to learn how to manage them. There are plenty of people that are already open or started that way who will also complain, that's probably not the right word, about being too open and being inundated by the sensations, the emotions of other people around them. So there's also quite a few suggestions and exercises in the book on how to manage this so it remains a gift rather than an impediment.
I've always heard that everybody has the capability of psychic development. Is that true? Do you believe that?
I do, but here's the part I'll be really honest about. So most human beings have access to some of the senses. Some of us are graced with having access to all the common ones. We can see, we can hear, we can smell, etc. And some people get by just fine with a smaller subset of that. Some of us have sharper hearing, sharper sight. So in the same sense, I would say that there are people who have sharper psychic senses, but that doesn't mean that everybody doesn't have some amount. Or musical talent. Most people aren't going to be able to make a living as a classical guitarist or a singer, but most people can learn how to appreciate music, or at the very least, how to sing well enough so that they enjoy themselves when they're driving their car and listening to the radio. So I can't promise that everyone will become a virtuoso, but I can promise that people are capable of awakening what they have. And even people who think that they are not terribly sensitive will report at different times in their life when they've either had a dream or known who it was on the other end before the phone began to ring and be picked up, or had the experience of knowing that a loved one was having a difficulty at some great distance away. So it's in us, but like many things, it's locked up because of expectations or beliefs. Or we're just a habit of not paying attention to anything that isn't explicitly part of our day-to-day life.
Is this ability that we have natural in that? Is it biological? Is it part of the brain function? Or is it outside of the brain?
You know, you're almost invoking the mind-brain question of where our consciousness is seated, whether it's in the body or whether it's something
else. Yeah.
And I'm going to say it's a bit of both. I'm going to say that our selfhood, at least these are my beliefs, is really a spiritual thing. Our soul, our spirit, whichever word you prefer. But the body acts as the antenna. The brain acts as the transceiver that allows us to anchor ourselves here in this place, in this time, in the physical world. So that if there's damage to the body, that's damaging the transceiver, but it doesn't mean the signal's still not out there. So I think that it is biologically present, but it's an interaction between systems that are partly physical and partly subtle. And I like using the word subtle as the catch-all for anything that's ethereal or anything that is of higher vibration, not physical in the way that we would normally think of it.
You have looked at psychic work, magic. How does that all tie together, or does it?
Yeah. How about I do the big trinity, psychism, spirituality, and magic.
Okay. And are they all separate but equal?
Separate, no. Overlapping, but not to the same degree. Equal, yes, but how about this?
Qualifier.
Yeah, there's a lot of qualifiers. For example, somebody can do psychic work without it being spiritual or magical. For example, if you view the psychic senses as that, just senses, then if somebody is open to and trained to using them, it is no different than somebody who has keen senses looking in the backyard and spotting the birds or the animals that were there, but the person standing next to them couldn't notice them because they were well camouflaged.
Mm-hmm.
So it is psychism is powers of observation that have been trained and honed. If you're talking about spiritual work, or spirituality, then that's, one, an intensely personal thing. And I do believe that for each person it is different, even if they have a particular upbringing or training as to what religiously should be happening. But spirituality is about your connection to, and then fill in the blank. Perhaps it's God or Goddess or Allah or Yahweh or Adonai or whatever. But it is your connection or to spirits of a smaller sort, because I'm going to use the word spirit as both, large things and small things, or it could be your dead aunt Edna. The bottom line is it's about communion with another spirit, another being, whether that's a small one or one that's vastly larger than you.
Now, when people begin to tune into the psychic realm,
yep,
and they seem to be in a groove, and they can't do anything wrong. They just keep picking these things up. How many people, though, Ivo, don't react to it? So it's one of those, oh, I should have, I could have, but they don't do it.
I think that we are conditioned in this culture, or I should say in Western culture, industrialized culture in general, to ignore it. Part of that is because over the last couple of hundred years, we've shifted towards elevating science as our primary religion in some ways. And part of it is from the religious end, that we're told that these things are reserved for saints or holy men or for lunatics. So I think that we do a lot of self-censoring, and the self-censoring process is so deeply ingrained that we don't even realize it until after the fact, or we have even no awareness that, you know, that little flicker that was at the end of our, at the corner of our eye was something we should have paid attention to.
In your opinion, whether it's the feminine or not, mm-hmm. what is God?
Well, I'm going to suggest something a little bit different than the Judeo-Christian perspective.
Okay.
I think that everything that exists is the divine as a starting point. That includes absolutely everything. How about this? You've probably heard, or your listeners have probably heard, the Hermetic axiom of as above, but so below, but in a different manner.
Right.
Okay. Let's, instead of looking at us as being the small, the microcosm that reflects the macrocosm, let's pop it up there, and I will suggest to you that the ultimate divine, the ultimate G asterisk D, God, Goddess, all of the above, is a consciousness, a mind, a spirit, and that the universe is its body in the same way that we have a soul or spirit, and our bodies are our anchoring point. And that we all live and exist and move. Every planet, every speck of dust, every human being is part of that giant body, which is the divine.
And I think we'd both agree that this universe was not formed with everything in it just randomly. It's just not a. It's not, not just nature. Something's behind it.
There, I believe that there is guidance, I also believe that there is free will. And I would also suggest that evolution is an example of free will.
Could there be, though, this divine intelligence that is behind all of this, but for the life of me, I don't understand how it started?
I don't think anyone of any one of us can. We are finite. We are only so big as individuals or collectively as a race, and that which we are trying to understand or describe is infinite, and whether or not that's physically true or actually true, for all intents and purposes, it is. So it literally is not possible for us to fit what it is into our finite consciousness. But what I do think is possible is for us to work with smaller forms. I think one of the reasons why I am drawn to or work within a magical system and faith community that sees many gods and goddesses is that they are basically small enough in scale for us to understand.
Well, that's a good point. Stay with us, Ivo. We're going to come back in just a moment as we continue talking about your work, Keys to Perception, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Ivo Domínguez with us. Keys to Perception, a practical guide to psychic development. We'll take calls with Ivo next hour here on Coast to Coast. You're also an astrologer. How do you mix the two, Ivo?
I actually think that they're a perfect blend. I view astrology as kind of like the lost language. There's lots of cultures that have the myth of the idea of an original language that everyone could speak, including the animals, and that we lost it over time for one reason or another. I think astrology is a way to describe what's going on with the energy of the world around us by looking at what's changing in the heavens, looking at the reflection above and seeing how it's manifesting here. So astrology is also intimately connected with the idea of joining heaven and earth. The holidays that I celebrate as a Wiccan are about connecting heaven and earth, and astrology is a way of describing how the heavens reflect themselves inside a person or in a country or in any part of the world. So it's the linking chain, if you will, between the above and the below.
Now, in your work, you use sometimes trance states and divine possession. What is the divine possession part? What is that?
Sure. Well, probably most of your listeners have the idea of people that act as, have seen or heard about people acting as mediums or people acting as channelers. And in most of those cases of you, that is seeking information or communication with someone who has passed on, etc. Divine possession or trance possession is really about making space within yourself so that a goddess, a god, a higher order being can slip down into you and speak more fully through you, be more present in a ceremony or in a healing or in a magical working. So it's something that's often treated poorly in media, whether it's the misrepresentation of trance possession in voodoo or the representation of it only as a negative occurrence when you see people overwhelmed by unwholesome spirits or unwholesome forces. Mm-hmm. But you also view it indirectly. Anytime that you say that somebody is having the power of the divine moving through them when they are speaking, when they are performing hands-on healing, it's a form of trance possession. But in magical communities and in Wicca among them, we actively work to hone the capacity to bring as much of the goddess or the god, and specific ones for that matter. We've been using the word goddess and god, but very often when we're doing transpossession, it's a specific one that we call into ourselves to be present, to borrow our eyes and hands and ears in a more direct way. Think of it as A expansion of a common principle. In most religious systems, we are told that in some ways human beings are the hands and eyes and ears of the divine on the planet doing their work. Well, this is taking it one step further and inviting for a portion of that consciousness to reside and rest within our bodies as we do the work.
In spite of all these evil, yeah. Do you believe in evil? That's close to your name, but you're not Evo.
Yeah, the name Evo is actually an old Celtic name. It shows up mostly in Eastern Europe and Spanish countries now, but it actually means archer or yew tree, the trees that bows used to be made out of.
Huh.
But you know what? I am going to say that there probably is such a thing as good and evil, but it's rare. And what I see most frequently, whether it's in the physical world or in the spiritual world, is health and pathology. In other words, as above, so below, once again, I'm going to invoke that. And in the same way as there are human beings that are pathological, that are sociopaths, that mean people harm and enjoy causing or inflicting harm on others, so too there are spirits that are ill, that are unwholesome, mm-hmm. that are unhealthy. So I'm more inclined to view things in terms of healthy and unhealthy, or perhaps sane and insane. So I think that's the way I would approach what presents itself as evil is more often than not what I would view as a form of insanity.
Biblically speaking, fallen angels. What do you think of that?
Whew. Well,
I'm pushing the envelope here.
No, that's okay. I'm actually going to say that anything that is ancient and eternal predates us. So I'm going to say that that angels existed before humanity. And I'm not saying that in a biblical sense of, well, sure, because the divine created the universe in a particular way, because I think there's lots of different ways that are all accurate in their own way. What I'm saying is that which was spiritual power individuated in the form of angels, that which was the stream of angel evolution, existed before the sun was lit. We forget how very often when we have these discussions that the universe is vast, that our sun is just one of many, and that I believe that the infinite power that created everything, including the gods and goddesses that I worship, is highly creative and probably created a bunch of different things. So, in that sense, are there beings that have chosen to act selfishly? Absolutely. Is one term for some of those fallen angel? Mm-hmm. If that works within your religious system, absolutely.
What about prophecy? Book of Revelation. What do you think of that?
I think all prophecy is self-fulfilling. I'm going to make a distinction here between divination and prophecy
right.
and oracular vision, because they're really three different flavors. So divination, let's say you go to somebody who pulls cards or closes their eyes and say, hey, I think you're about to get fired at work because the company's being bought out, blah, blah, blah. That's divination. They're basically taking the weather forecast. They're looking at the most probable future that we are likely to be headed in and giving you a heads up in the same way that popping on the local news and catching the 20 minutes or so that discuss the weather. So, and it's never completely accurate because the weather is in flux and so is the future. Then there is prophecy. Prophecy is when someone sees the future and then of 1,001 branches, because I think the future is constantly branching like a roadway that has ever more crossroads, and at each crossroads it's not four or three things, but 1,000 things, and each little turn changes the future. Prophecy is picking a future out of the many, and by stating it, encouraging people to go towards that future rather than any other.
Okay, so with everything that you have learned over the years, how do you personally use your psychic perception?
Wow. I don't think a day goes by that I don't use it. And in some ways, it is integrated into the way I live. So, for example, I will be doing something as mundane as weeding in my garden, and I'll simply listen to know. This is where, and I do organic gardening, so I don't use pesticide. So I listen and go straight to where the bugs are that I need to pick off the plants, because I am listening to where are the bugs. Because I don't like to hurt anything. When I'm cutting the grass, I will, you know, put out a little call, you know, let me know where all the frogs, all the turtles are, so that I don't run over any of them. When I am trying to select whether I should take one flight or another when I travel, I listen to guidance as to which one is going to get me there on time and safely.
Huh. Have you ever not gone on a plane because you felt bad about it?
Yes.
Really? And did anything happen?
In a manner of speaking, yeah, I would have been snowed in Chicago.
Well, so, that's a hassle.
Yeah, I will say that there are times that I have not followed my guidance, and sometimes it's very, very, very distinct. And here's where I'm going to say that our psychology is everything. It's probably you might guess, because a lot of people that are into what I'm into are also into science fiction, and I was a great Star Trek fan. I can think of at least three separate occasions where I have been in a large city or I'm doing something, and the klaxon, the loud danger alarm that used to go off in original Star Trek and then in Next Generation Star Trek.
Yeah.
Man, I hear that in my head incredibly loud, and because that immediately catches my attention that there is something risky, that I need to become aware of my environment, get out of my head, and start looking around. Now, is that something that is a natural occurrence? No. It's a question of your psychology determines which symbols, which sounds, which things are going to pop you into waking consciousness fast. So some part of me, and actually I think that the part of me that is talking right now, the part that speaks in words and linear ideas, is probably a very small portion of me, as is probably true for most human beings. And the part that needs to get my attention is my deeper wisdom, where the rest of me resides, and that needs to use the symbols that my waking self will respond to.
What about magic? How do you apply magic with all of this?
What I always like to tell people when they ask, what is magic? I'm going to say magic is prayer with muscle behind it.
that's probably pretty accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it is, like anything, in the same way that, sure, go on ahead and if somebody's looking for work, yeah, we can do a ritual to help you find work, but also brush up your resume and send it out. So the physical part matters, but here's another bit. Magic is about using your psychic senses, using what's accepted lore to figure out these are the symbolic actions that link my physical actions to the engines of creation, to the powers around me. Or if you want to go less mechanistic, to the ground of the universe where I can plant a seed that will grow. So magic is about consciously trying to connect symbolic actions and your energy and your consciousness to things that are part of the physical world.
What would you say in your career, Ivo, have you applied this or saw somebody apply this to something that was truly magnificent that helped them out? Maybe avoid a car accident or something like that?
I can tell you a couple of things. The first time for 7 years, second time for 10 years, I owned a metaphysical shop that I used to do readings at. And I'll share one of my own, and then I'll share somebody else's. One of the most difficult ones I ever had to do was a woman who came in, young woman, and said, before I even, you know, started the reading, she said, "I have terminal cancer. I have three different treatment regimens that I can take, and I need to know," and she says, "I don't care about the quality of my life. I just need to live long enough so that my daughter will reach 18 and become an adult, because she cannot end up with her father, who was, as you might gather, a horrible person." So I did several passes at it, and finally said, "This is the one that will give you the most life, but it will be horrible. But you will live long enough so that your daughter will be an adult and not under the control of your ex-husband." And it worked out that way. Now, with most of these things, it's impossible to prove is it because I saw clearly or not. But over time, when it happens often enough, you decide that, yes, something is happening there. In another case, there was somebody who I was asking a question about something completely different, and I was giving her information about it. And then I, out of nowhere, I said, "I'm going to stop the reading, and I've got to tell you that, next couple of days, you need to be on the lookout for a big yellow truck, because otherwise you're going to be in terrible pain." And about a week later, she called me up and said, yeah, she got cut off in an intersection by a yellow truck, and if she hadn't been looking for it, she might have been hit.
Oh, jeez.
But there are few examples like that. There are examples of, I have one of my teachers who's passed on, who, and once again, you can never prove any of these things, but I was fortunate enough to be one of her assistants in a healing ritual that she did for a woman who had been told that she did not have long for the world. And that woman lived for a good 10 years after the date that the doctor said that she was due to die. So what caused that? And if you are a purely secular person, you may say, well, it's just the power of the mind and suggestion, and it gave the woman the impetus to rally the forces in her own body to heal herself. And I have no way to say that didn't happen.
However, there's a big however there.
The big however is that none of us ever know. And in truth, most of the things that occur that are truly important, even down to why pharmaceuticals work in human beings, a lot of them, the mechanism for action is not known. And I am pragmatic in the following thing. If it works, ultimately, I don't necessarily need to know exactly why it works, simply that it works. Because I don't have the hubris, I don't have the arrogance to believe that I have to know everything or that I'm even capable of knowing everything. But my experience over time is that there are things that help. There was a woman in our community who had a situation where she's a single mom, and the boyfriend that she had come back from war, and it's not his fault, but he didn't come back right. He came back broken in many ways and was dangerous to her and to her young daughter. And we did a binding spell since we couldn't get the police to do anything about it, we did a binding spell to basically, should he come within, 100 yards of her daughter, or her house, that he should feel increasing levels of discomfort, mm-hmm. until he had to turn back.
Was that a spell or was it a curse?
Well, it was, I would call it a binding and not a curse, because he still had the option of free will. If he meant her no harm and would stay away from her, he would feel no discomfort. So the minute he would turn away, the discomfort would cease. I put that in the same category as locking the house and putting up a security system. It doesn't. So he could live his life, he could do whatever he wanted as long as he stayed out of her way.
It works, doesn't it?
And here's the distinction I would say, because there's an ethical question here. Never do anything involving prayer, magic, spirituality that you would not do if you were standing in front of a person in the real world.
That's an interesting take, too. That probably makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, if you can, you know, and I cannot speak to other people's ethics and morality. And my take on it karmically, let's throw in the karma word for a moment, is if I ever become a scary, dangerous, crazed boyfriend, I hope somebody prevents me from causing harm.
Yeah, no, I get where you're coming. Let's take a quick break, Ivo, and come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, where we'll take phone calls as we talk about keys to perception.